You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's NL East beat reporters. The NL East, as we speak, is settled. The Nationals have won it. They're going to the postseason. They're opening at home and have a pretty good shot at having the first overall seed in the National League for both rounds. Behind the Nationals, though, there's still definitely some intrigue. The Braves made a major change in the front office after a disappointing second half, and we'll be looking at the direction for that organization. The Mets are excited about the future, and so are the Marlins, and the Phillies remain more interesting than you might think as they continue to play decent ball in the second half of what has been overall a disappointing season. We'll be looking ahead to 2015 for the teams that didn't make the playoffs, and we'll be looking ahead to the postseason for those division-winning Washington Nationals. Thanks, everybody, for listening to MLB.com Extras. Talking Washington Nationals with MLB.com's Nationals beat reporter, Bill Ladson. Bill, as we approach the postseason, it's getting very close. It's getting to time when teams are setting up their rotations and making sure everybody's in place. How does the Nationals' rotation look like it's going to shape up for the division series?
Well, it's going to shape up with Strasburg starting game one, followed by Jordan Zimmermann, provided that his shoulder's okay. Remember, he was hit by a little line drive against the Marlins, and Doug Fister, and then Gio Gonzalez. You have Tanner Roark, who's had a great year. He's going to probably work out of the bullpen. So that's an extra reliever that they have, and I think it's a great reliever to have. So that's the good news.
Was that in any way ever in any real doubt? I mean, we talked, it's been a month or two, and we talked about Fister maybe even being a game one guy.
Right.
Is this really mostly a matter of just kind of Strasburg establishing himself as the guy they kind of always wanted him to be anyway?
Right, yes. You know, Matthew, I think you said it best. I think Matt Williams all along, from the start of the season to the All-Star break, he wanted to make sure that Strasburg was the number one guy, and that's the way it's going to be. I mean, you've seen how many pitches he's thrown per game, which is a lot for him. And he said he wanted to make him the ace, and that's what Matt Williams is doing.
None of the teams they look to face have particularly strong left-right splits, with the exception of the Pirates, who are really dangerous against right-handed pitchers. But yes. Was there any consideration to going all right, or any of the ways that, again, just things we've talked about? Gonzalez was shaky at times this year. Was he ever in any jeopardy, or was that really kind of a stretch to think he wouldn't get a start?
In retrospect, I think it was a stretch. I know I told you that if Gio kept up pitching, you know, poorly, that he would not be in the rotation. But he's improved his last few starts. And as of a few weeks ago, there wasn't any danger. If you had asked me this during the All-Star break, I would have said he's in danger. But he is not in danger at all.
Do you think that the Nationals match up particularly well or poorly against it? Really, I mean, it's interesting to step back a bit. They really could still be facing any of four teams. Do you think any of those matchups present a particularly good or a particularly bad matchup between the Dodgers, the Giants, the Cardinals, and the Pirates?
Well, there are two teams that I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the Pirates, as strangely as that may sound. Now, I know the Pirates, they do not have better pitching than the Nationals, but my concern is McCutchen, because McCutchen did not play the three games at Nationals Park because he was hurt, and he's a Nats killer. So that's my biggest concern. You're going to have McCutchen back for sure. My other concern are the Cardinals, because say what you want about the Cardinals. The Cardinals do not have a better record, but believe me when I tell you, the Cardinals are on the Nationals' mind, because, you know, what happened in 2012, they should have beat them. The Nationals should have beat them. And somehow, as you saw, things went differently. So I think they're concerned about the Cardinals as well, because they got to prove they can beat them. That's a must.
Yeah, it's an interesting combination, because on the one hand, the Cardinals lineup does seem like the kind of lineup that a pitching staff like Washington's should be able to silence pretty effectively. And yet,
right,
even I, as the last guy to worry about soft factors, I'm with you. I kind of have to wonder about whether that's in the back of anybody's mind. And particularly, and not to beat a really long dead horse, but Is there any concern at all in particular about Storen in the ninth inning if St. Louis is the matchup in the division series?
Absolutely not, and I'll tell you why. This is a different pitcher than you saw in 2012, Matthew. As you know, Storen only had maybe one or two pitches. That was it. This is a guy now who has four pitches now, and his changeup is the game changer. So there is no way Storen is going to repeat to me what he did in 2012. He has more pitches now. The Cardinals can't be waiting for a certain pitch anymore. So I think it will be different. The only concern I have in terms of the bullpen is what do you do with Soriano? Because I don't care what anyone says. He's been horrible in the second half. So I have a problem with that.
And that actually leads right into my next question, which is what roster decisions are there still to be made? And particularly, is Soriano's roster spot in question?
You have to think so because, I mean, you're not going to use him in the eighth inning. You're not going to use him in the seventh because that's really stamina and clippers, in my opinion. And so, I mean, he could be off the roster. I mean, it would be sad because considering the saves he has, but he has not pitched well, Matthew, not at all.
Are there any other decisions that are going to go down to the wire as far as who is or is not on the division series roster?
I think it comes down to Jerry Blevins. Jerry Blevins has pitched poorly in the second half in particular. When he first came to the Nationals, his job was to get everybody out. But now he just can get lefties out, and that's it. And, I mean, I'm sure that Matt Williams wants someone that can get everybody out. So he could be in trouble. Danny Espinosa could be in trouble. It depends on Ryan Zimmerman. If Zimmerman can't stay healthy, I can see Espinosa still being on that roster. But if Zimmerman's playing, I'm just telling you, I don't see Espinosa making this roster.
What do you think the odds are of Zimmerman being available for the division series?
You know what? I tell you, man, I mean, I know I'm in the minority on this. To me, he's not running that well. And, I say it's 60-40 that he's on the roster only because he's a great hitter. He'd be a good pinch hitter. And I say he's on that roster right now.
All right. What do you think, regardless of opponent, what do you think the biggest worry for this team is overall as it enters the postseason?
You know, Matthew, for weeks, and you and I have talked privately, my concern is the offense. I mean, yes, the offense has been doing well lately, but, I mean, this offense can be stopped. I mean, it's not like they have, like, two or three guys that can really dominate, you know, and that's my biggest concern right now. I just hope that the Nationals can be consistent. If you look at 2012, it's no different than 2012. If you have the pitching, they can be stopped. And I hope that's not the case this time.
And that's interesting because one of the teams you didn't note as a particular concern is Los Angeles. And I would think that's the one team with the rotation that could maybe – that has the most chance of – pitching to a lineup, but I agree with you. It's a very good lineup, and yet at the same time, you can't help feeling like if you make your pitches, you can pitch to that lineup.
Yeah, and Matthew, you know, that's a great question you asked me about the Dodgers. There's Clayton Kershaw, and that's it. And if you saw that that Dodgers series, and I know you did, Kershaw was the only one they couldn't hit. I mean, everybody else, no one else on that rotation can scares me. So I think they would have a good time beating the Dodgers. I'm not worried about the Dodgers. As strange as that may sound, I know they have Kershaw, but I think they can beat everybody else.
Interesting. And then to turn it around, give me one big reason to think this team does go deep in the postseason.
Because they're pitching. They have great starters. They have great relievers, with the exception of one, Soriano. And I think that's going to be the key. They have to play great defense, too, because – without that, they're going nowhere.
What's your level of confidence in Williams as far as pulling the right levers with substitutions, relievers, all that kind of thing in his first postseason series? Do you regard that as any kind of concern?
Not at all. I mean, I don't see him making head-scratching moves like Davey Johnson did in the fifth game of 2012. I mean, we're not going to see Matt Williams put in a person like Edwin Jackson, like Davey Johnson did. I think we're going to see the right people who are in there. And I think if something goes wrong early, I think Matt Wynn's not afraid to pull the plug on certain pitchers. So I think it's going to be different than what we saw in 2012.
And that actually is a lesson that I believe very strongly and that I think you learned from the first guy that comes to my mind, of course, is Tony La Russa, but I think Joe Torre was also really good about that, that you have to win today's game. You can't
Correct.
Worry about a guy's ego. You can't worry about tomorrow. If your starting pitcher is getting lit up, you got to get him out. You think Williams is a guy who will follow that idea?
No question. There's no doubt in my mind about that. The only thing that we'll see that we didn't see in 2012, we're going to see Matt Williams play small ball quite a bit. He believes in being aggressive. We're going to see some bunts, you know, stolen bases. We're going to see a lot of that, hit and run. So it's going to be way different than what we saw in 12.
And one last thing. Give me one guy who's maybe not obvious, you know, not a Rendon or a Harper or a Worth. Mm-hmm. Give me one guy who's not obvious that will make a big difference in how far this team goes in the postseason.
This might sound strange, but the bench. The bench, I think, is very important. The bench has been horrible for the most part. If you look at the overall average, it's like 160. I think the bench is going to be key. I think a guy like Schierholz would play a huge role. Kevin Franson is their best bench guy, but they need more than Franson to get the job done. I'm looking at their bench to help out.
All right. Well, Bill Ladson, I'm going to be seeing a lot of you over the next week and maybe longer than that. Thanks for taking some time here on MLB.com Extras, talking Atlanta Braves with MLB.com's Braves beat reporter Mark Bowman. Mark, this is a team with very high expectations and a team that did a great job earlier in the year overcoming some injuries that I think people thought might have derailed them, and then it all kind of came apart in the second half. What happened to this club in the second half?
You know, it's there are a lot of different – when you talk to some of the players, you know, when did it go wrong, what went wrong. I think the root of the matter was that there was some lineup construction problems. This offense has been a problem throughout, and if we look at it, we say, well, what happened? You know, last year they ranked fourth in the league in National League in scoring. Well, this year they struck out just as frequently, but the home runs weren't there. And when you point to the second half at being a different team, let's go back to the end of June when Evan Gattis injured his back. He sat out approximately 3 weeks. So you're looking at probably missing somewhere between 15 to 20 games with the All-Star break, you know, taking being a part of that stretch. And then here throughout September when they have struggled mightily, he has been sidelined with what was strep throat and then a kidney stone. So without that power presence in the middle of the lineup, that this offense that has struggled even while he was present was that much worse. And, you know, obviously the other September problems were that Justin Upton did not really get going ever. It really, he probably had his worst month that he's had since he's been in Atlanta. And, you know, I just don't think that this team ever got going. We saw it in early April. They started off 17-7. And they had their starting pitchers through those first 24 games had a 1.57 ERA. We all knew that they could not sustain that. But the thought was, okay, that the starting pitchers will take a step back, but the offense will start picking up more slack, and you know everything's going to even out. That this team will be okay. Well, you know, there's only one part of that equation that occurred, and it has been as frustrating a season as I have seen here in Atlanta. You know, since I started covering the club in 2001, there have been worse seasons. There have been worse teams. And I know fans have said that, you know, when I've written the word disappointment in the past, but I have not been around a team. And I think many of the people who have been here much longer than I have will say, never seen a team with expectations like this disappoint so greatly.
And at least partly as a result of that, though, I think, definitely not entirely as a result of the on-field. There was a pretty major change in the front office this week. Braves have replaced Frank Wren as their general manager. First of all, because I think there's a lot of uncertainty about this out there, How much of this was about performance, and how much of it was about sort of organizational culture?
I really think that it was the, you know, 95% about organizational culture, and maybe even greater than that. And I will go as far as to once again say, had they made the playoffs, had they won even the first round, let's say they got to the division series and won that, I think this was still going to occur. Something, you know, John Shurtleff just continued to hear things about the unhappiness of his employees. There was a, he pointed out, scouting and player development. If you look at the list of prospects the Braves have had here recently, you know, it's not like they once had. They used to be much stronger in that department. You know, some people point out, hey, look, well, you know, all their young talent is already there in Atlanta. And there's some truth to that, but there have been some negative drafts here recently. But at the same time, you know, Shurtleff can't overlook the fact that some of, you know, there were a couple years there under his tenure, 06, 07, they hit on a bunch of them. That was the Hayward Freeman year, but 08 was not a good one. That was the year after Shurtleff. So it's, you know, this has been a kind of a lingering problem, not only with the talent that's coming in, but there was just a lot of unhappy employees. And the organization there at the minor league level was not good. At the major league level, what I'm hearing from players, especially now that they're speaking out a little bit more about this, was just the disconnect that was felt between themselves and the front office. They didn't feel like there was a, they could turn to those guys and they could trust them, is a word that I've heard multiple times. You know, there's a lot of these guys that I went to ask about this. They say, well, I really don't know what it's like about it, you know, anywhere else, because there are so many homegrown players here. But I've gone to the other guys who have been multiple places, and that's what they said, that, you know, they just didn't feel like the support was there, not only with them but with the coaches, and that created a culture that was not healthy within the clubhouse. So, you know, I think John Shurtleff felt this. Here's a guy who really – helped build this organization into, you know, a proud one throughout the 90s and early part of this decade. And, you know, I think he and Bobby Cox got together and tried, and now they're going to try to restore what they had before. They're going to have to, it's going to take some time. And the first step is finding the right guy to hire as a GM.
And you kind of touched on my next question there. Based on who is running this search and how it's going to be done, I think it's fair to say that we already have a pretty good idea of, if not who the name is, at least kind of what the candidate's going to look like and what they want in a general manager?
I do. I really do. I think that, you know, we've thrown some names out there. I think there are a lot of people here in Atlanta, if they were around Dayton Moore when he was here, they like him, but I really see him as a I don't want to quite call it a long shot, but to get back to exactly what you said, the fact that John Shurtleff, he is showing that he really would like John Hart to take this job on a full-time basis. John Hart obviously has shown that he would like to continue to have his freedom, you know, continue to be an MLB Network analyst, to, you know, not be tied down to the job full-time. I've also heard Jerry Hunsaker's name. I've heard Dan O'Dowd's name, but I really, that one I have not written for the simple fact I don't think that there's a reason to touch anything, you know, associated with the Rockies right now. And I think that, but just the fact that character, that the older GM style is being thrown out there with that name, leads me to think that they would like to hire a guy who would be around here for 2 or 3 years and then you know, hand the reins, see if John Coppolella, a bright young mind, is ready to take over the role at that time. And you know, I really think Coppy can do a lot of aspects of the job. Just, I think, at 36 years old, John Shurtleff says he needs a few more years of seasoning, needs to get out in the public eye a little bit more, get more comfortable there. And, you know, maybe in a few years he will be ready.
To what extent is a search then complicated by all of that? I mean, if you want to hire somebody as a general manager and yet somebody knows that the number of big personalities, and not just big personalities, the number of sort of big influences, the number of people who will have a major say in the decision-making, how much does that complicate the search for somebody to be your general manager?
Well, you're saying that if with John Hart's presence there, how does that complicate it?
With Sherholtz clearly going to have a strong say, with Bobby Cox apparently going to have a strong say, with potentially your successor right there in the front office, it just seems like there's some places where you go in as a GM and you say, this is my show. Seems like if you go in as a GM there, you know that you're not going to be the final person saying, this is my show. You're going to be part of a group that maybe that's not always the way it works in front offices.
Yeah, I know. That's a very good point. And I think that the same can be said about how the fans say that they're not real happy. That it seems like they're leaning towards, you know, keeping Freddy Gonzalez. There's a lot of fans that you know, say, you know, enough's enough. They need a complete new reboot. They want to see Freddy go as well. And I think that's along those lines that they're saying, well, as long as Bobby's there, Freddie's not going anywhere. And I understand why they're saying that. I do. And that may prove to be true. But I think that applies to exactly what you're saying as well. Is, well, if these are the guys that are running the show, these are then how is a GM from the outside going to come in and be able to create his own show? Are there going to be limitations? Are they going to feel like, you know, everything that they do has to be what you know, John Sherholtz and Bobby Cox want? The one thing I will say to that is John Sherholtz, the one thing I have learned over the years is he is a great leader because he does delegate authority. Once he hires you, he steps out of the way, you know, whatever job he's given you. That is what has made him successful. And if he's going to make this successful transition with you know, hiring this next GM, he's going to have to do that as well. You know, find a guy that he trusts, put him in that job, you know, step out of the way. And you're right. It's going to be interesting to see who he sees fit to take that role.
As far as the product on the field, what do you see this team trying to accomplish and making as its priorities this offseason?
Well, you know, there's so many different things. You know, B.J. Upton's salary sitting right there. You know, how do you move him? Evan Gattis, here's a guy who has incredible power, you know, at the catcher's position. But, you know, is that power going to wane as the years go on? He's has to play the catcher's position on a daily basis. Do you try to move him to an American League team? Their second baseman of the future is probably not quite ready. So you're looking at Tommy Listel and Phil Gosselin coming back there, but Jose Peraza may come up at some point midway through next year. And there are some questions of the pitching staff. I think they have to hope that Mike Minor's shoulder, you know, as over the winter does heal. They have to hope that it was just the odd spring training that he had this year that led to his problems. You know, if you've got Julio Teheran, Mike Minor, and who am I missing? Oh, Alex Wood, you know, as your front three. You know, that's a good base. You know, it's going to be some interesting decisions with Chris Medlin coming off a second Tommy John surgery. Where how much do you try to bring him back? You know, what kind of offer do you make to him? Same thing with Brandon Beachy, Aaron Harang. You know, do you try to bring him back on another cheap offer, take another chance, or? You know, was the gamble, have you already taken that gamble or made the most of that gamble, let's say that. David Hale could step into a rotation spot. There will be some questions there on within the rotation. I do expect this to be an active offseason. I don't think there will be very many stretches between now and at least the winter meetings where, you know, the Braves aren't creating some kind of news.
All right, well, sounds like you'll be busy. Mark Bowman, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter, Anthony DiComo. It's kind of a strange year for the Mets. I don't think anybody would call it a particularly good year, given some of the expectations, but is it fair to say it at least wasn't a particularly bad year, given some of the developments that did happen?
Well, I mean, record-wise, they're going to finish with their best record since Sandy Alderson and Terry Collins took over, which I guess
if you're looking as black and white as you can look, that's always a good thing. You know, this is a team that towards the end of last season, they really aspired to be a playoff team in 2014, and obviously that didn't happen. I think everyone was hit with a little dose of realism when Matt Harvey got hurt and they realized they weren't going to have him this year. I think expectations kind of dwindled at that point, and that sort of we hope to and really think we can fight for a playoff spot became more of a, you know, let's do the best we can and go into 2015 as strong as possible. So I don't think it is particularly disappointing. I think in a lot of ways they had some players emerge. They had some nice things happen. So they were encouraged by a lot of that. But they've reached a point now where what they did this year is no longer good enough, and they really want to be better, and they really want to be one of those teams that people's talking about at this time next year.
And I guess that's sort of what I'm getting at. It ends up, I think, being a pretty successful year for Travis d'Arnaud. Juan Lagares has a nice year. Obviously, DeGrom emerges. Wilmer Flores emerges. Duda has a really nice year. It seems like it's not that hard to look at a young core here and see something where, with the right moves around it, this actually could be a pretty good team pretty soon. I mean, do you think is that too rose-colored, or is that a reasonable way to look at it?
No, they've certainly put themselves in a position where if they do the right things this winter, and will A, do the right things, and B, have those moves work out, which hasn't always been the case in the past, they certainly could compete for a playoff spot next year. The issue is, you know, the payroll is very low. It was around $85 million next year, and, you know, that's going to bump up just with arbitration guys getting bigger contracts and just paying the guys they already have on the roster. So to go out and fix the holes that they have, be it left field or if they want to address shortstop or anything like that, they're going to have to spend a little money, and they're going to have to really increase payroll by a relatively significant amount for the first time in years. Until they're willing to do that, I think everyone's sort of stepping back and saying, well, we'll believe it when we see it. But until they're willing to do that, that's sort of the way that you can make that quick fix and make this from a team that's teetering on the edge of contention to one that can really go into spring training saying we expect to compete. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch with the Mets going into the winter.
And that then is really the sort of elemental question. Are they willing and able to do that, to make that leap and get to it at least a higher payroll? I don't think anybody expects them to be in that top tier right now, but are they in a position where you do see the payroll being higher next year by a significant amount?
Well, they say they are. And Jeff Wilpon, you know, used the term payroll flexibility, quote-unquote, when addressing the situation recently. So on the one hand, you know, you sort of have to take them at their word. On the other hand, they've said these things before, and they didn't increase payroll, and really it's just gone down dramatically from where it was in 2011 to where it is now. So, you know, if you're a fan of the team, you just have to kind of sit back and hope they're willing to do it, because the only other way to fix these holes that they have on offense is to dip into the starting pitching depth and maybe make a trade or two. And once you start going down that path, all of a sudden your greatest strength is no better than anyone else's. So really, I mean, the way I see it going into the offseason, they have to spend a little money if they want to put themselves in that position to compete.
Where can they get better? Is corner outfield really the main focus for upgrading the offense?
Yeah, corner outfield is a huge one. Left field in particular. You've got Curtis Granderson in right field, and, you know, maybe he's done being an elite player. Maybe he bounces back next year, but you're sort of stuck with him either way. Left field is the one position where they can really get significantly better. They have no one on the current roster that really profiles as a high-ceiling player there. And not that there's anyone you're really lusting over in the free agent market, but there are some guys who can help. There are the younger guys. There's the Melky Cabrera crowd that's going to take a big contract, or they could go a little older and try and sign, say, a Michael Kadire to a one-year deal or a two-year deal. It's the one position where they got very little production out of this year that you can say, well, with one stroke, we can maybe get some big production, some big power production, and it would go a long way towards making this lineup more complete.
Is there any way they do something like bring in a first baseman and move Duda to the outfield, or is that not viable?
That is off the table. They like what Duda's done at first base. They think he can hit with enough power to really man that position, and they've seen him in the outfield before. they didn't like what they saw, and it's just not something they're willing to do again.
Of course, the other key thing that could make this offense a lot better would be for David Wright to be David Wright again. What do you think the prognosis is on him, both physically and performance-wise, for 2015?
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I mean, the hope, and what you have to hope for if you're the Mets, is that his shoulder was really bothering him way more than he thought, than the Mets thought, than anyone let on at the time. Because if this is more age than it was injury for Wright in 2014, they're in trouble. They're committed to this guy through 2020. He's a monster part of what they're doing. You know, David said recently that he was more hurt than he was letting on and that his shoulder was really messed up. They went in afterwards and took some tests on it, and the ligaments were all stretched out. It wasn't really a good situation for a guy who generates a lot of his value with power hitting. So, yeah, they have to hope he bounces back in a big way, and I don't think anyone expects the David Wright of 2006-2007, who is a perennial 30-homer, 300 threat, to come back. But if you get more what he was doing in 2012-2013, and he can give that to you again next year, it makes the entire lineup a lot better.
Is this a thing where he's a candidate for surgery or anything, or is it just shut it down over the winter and come back strong?
They're trying to avoid surgery at all costs, and just the thought of, you know, opening anyone up if you don't have to is something they'd like to avoid. Right now, he's in the middle of a rehab strengthening program that will determine if he's able to avoid surgery. He thinks he will be able to avoid it. The Mets think he will be able to avoid it. You know, he could have a setback somewhere along this that would force him into an operation, which wouldn't be good for anyone, because then you're talking about maybe not being ready for opening day. But until that happens, or unless that happens, he's just going to rehab, strengthen, and hope he's back to 100%, you know, really by the start of the winter, so that he can go into a full, normal, healthy offseason.
They've got a lot of very appealing pieces in the rotation. How do you think the rotation most likely shapes up breaking camp next spring?
Yeah, it's going to be a tough situation, assuming they don't trade anyone, which is a big assumption, because I think there's a very good chance that they go in and trade maybe a Bartolo Colon or maybe a John Neath. But assuming they don't trade anyone, you've got Matt Harvey, who's obviously a lock for the rotation. You've got Jacob deGrom, who's positioned himself obviously as a lock for the rotation. You've got Zach Wheeler, who's a lock. And then you've got these other guys who are sort of a tier down. You've got John Neath, and you've got Dylan Gee, and you've got Bartolo Colon. And that right there is too many guys for five spots. There's different things they can do. They could, say, put Dylan Gee into the bullpen and you know, hope he takes to it and hope he's amenable to it. They could start Matt Harvey a little later, maybe not have him ready for opening day, in the hopes that he would be still strong and good to go coming off Tommy John surgery at the end of September. Or, you know, they could trade one of these guys in the offseason. They know they need depth, which is an issue, but they also have Noah Syndergaard. They have Rafael Montero ready to go from the minors. So it's something that they're going to have to sit down this winter, and they're going to have to really strategize, you know, with the front office in terms of who the personnel is actually going to be heading into spring training, but also if they are going to wind up having six or seven guys coming in for five spots in spring training, who are the candidates to start in the minors, who are the candidates to start in the bullpen, who are the candidates, and I'm talking about Matt Harvey specifically here, that maybe you wait and you take it easy with him in April.
What does the ninth look like? Is Mejia likely the guy, and is Parnell going to be a factor in that next year?
Yeah, Parnell is probably not going to be ready by opening day, but he could very well be ready by mid-April, maybe by the start of May. You know, what I think they're going to do is have Mejia start out. He certainly hasn't done anything wrong in the role, but they're going to have him start out and see how he does as the closer again. And if he's struggling when Parnell comes back, I think they'll put Parnell right back in that fire. If Mejia has it in lockdown mode and he's establishing himself as one of the better closers in the league, I think they'll let him run with it. The wild card to me in all this is not Parnell, but it's Familia, who's just had a great season and really a better season than Mejia in all respects. They like him in the eighth inning, but maybe he's their best option in the ninth going forward, just considering how good of a power arm he is and how effective he's been really in what's been his rookie season.
We've gone 10 minutes here, and we haven't even talked about shortstop, which I think probably would have been inconceivable a few months ago. It looks from the outside like they have a pretty good idea of who their shortstop is finally. I mean, do you think Wilmer Flores at least breaks camp as the 2015 Mets shortstop?
I would be surprised at this point if he doesn't. And the reason why I say that is, yes, there are free agents available out there, but I think, A, the Mets would rather allocate that limited resources that they're willing to spend. I think they'd rather allocate that to the corner outfield. And, B, I think they see Wilmer Flores as a guy whose ceiling at this point is really higher, or at least as high as a J.J. Hardy or as a Jed Lowry or as these guys who are in their 30s already. They like Wilmer Flores a lot. They've always liked his bat. And, you know, over the past 2 years, he's hit at every level. So as long as he can demonstrate that he's adequate defensively at shortstop, which I think everyone believes he's done so far this year, there's no reason not to give him a chance. You're saving a lot of money, and you can allocate that money to a place where you need it a lot more, and that's corner outfield.
All right. Well, Anthony DeComo, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, talking Miami Marlins with MLB.com's Marlins beat reporter Joe Fusaro. Joe, the end of this year for the Marlins has to be something of a disappointment, but around the organization, around the city, is it fair to say this would be considered a pretty good year for the Marlins organization and, frankly, for the team on the field?
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw a lot of growth. I think you saw a lot of improvement. You know, they played hard for Red. You saw the start of stability, which is something that Giancarlo Stanton talked about before the season started. You know, it looks like there's a good foundation of a good solid team in place. Obviously, disappointment to not carry it all the way to the final week, but eliminated with 9 games to go. But really, you know, we talked about last week, pretty much when Stan got hit in the face, it kind of took the air out of the balloon for the season, and you just kind of felt the team felt that was too much to overcome, and now it's just, you know, about carrying the positives and, you know, seeing how they can, you know, some pieces like Enrique Hernandez and Justin Bourhaus, some of these guys could step up in the final, you know, few games and see how they do and get some pieces as we move towards 15.
They're not going to fall short by 2 or 3 games, so it may be an unfair question, but in retrospect, how much different do you think this season looks if they have Jose Fernandez all year?
Yeah, it's probably a lot, you know, because they're probably, you know, would have been there with the Braves for most, assuming the Nationals, which, you know, the clear-cut favorite from the beginning. Once they got healthy and hot, they were going to be hard to catch by anybody. But the Braves were certainly realistic. We saw what the Mets have done, you know, with a late run. I thought that they could have at least taken second place and maybe made that, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Giants have something to sweat about. You know, just as you know, what an ace brings in terms of the innings they log, the stress they take off the bullpen, the offense, those ability have to do as much, to how it energizes, and then couple them with, you know, Henderson Alvarez, Jared Kozar, you know, they had the makings of a very strong rotation. So, yeah, it is a bit of what if, but as you know, all teams have, you know, had their share of adversity and lost their star players. What we saw was the Marlins just didn't have enough high-end depth, you know, to carry it all the way to the finish.
What are the expectations for Fernandez next year? How much will he be able to pitch if things go well, and how big a part of the 2015 club is he expected to be?
Well, just his quick timeline, October 1st, he's been cleared to start his throwing program. So he'll start off at about 30 feet at 3 minutes and then take it from there. Knowing him, he'll be eager to go, but, you know, right away, but knowing, you know, the timeline now on these starting pitchers, 14 months seems to be kind of the area that benchmark that doctors are recommending. So I'm anticipating, you know, Fernandez being in the rotation around the All-Star break. And if he comes back as is and they can get, you know, a more solid top of the rotation to go into 15 to bridge those first couple of months, it would almost be like acquiring an ace at the trade deadline, you know. So it could be a huge game changer for the 15 season, assuming there's no serious setbacks and he returns to a level that many would expect.
What do you expect the 2015 rotation to look like, at least at the beginning of the year?
Well, I'm anticipating them either making a trade or a free agent signing, so I think that there could be a, you know, somebody there. That we don't know who it is just yet. But right now, I would think Henderson Alvarez would be your opening day starter. Jared Cosart would be number two. And, you know, Tom Kohler has really made a name for himself, a good solid year. He's going to not hit 200 innings, but he's going to make all of his starts. He's the one guy that pretty much went start to finish. You know, he would be in the mix for three. You know, Nathan Eovaldi is a guy who's really, really dropped off in the second half. He had an encouraging start the other day. Wasn't a win, but he, you know, showed some signs that, you know, better than the six ERA he was posting most of the second half. So, you know, he's a guy who is going to have to be, you know, seriously watched and, you know, kind of monitored to see if this guy is going to be what they thought he can be in terms of quality of arm. And he's 24 years old. You don't want to quit on that just yet, but, you know, there's going to be pressure on him, but he'd shape up as about four. And then you'd see, you know, the Andrew Heaneys and, you know, Brad Hand, you know, he was out of options this year. He's had moments, a left-hander with good arm, but hasn't had the consistency. So those guys, Anthony DeSclafani, those type of guys would be fighting for number five, I would say, if they stayed within in-house.
When you talk about an external addition, are we talking a warm body back of the rotation kind of guy, or are we talking something more significant?
No, I think they're talking a game changer. You know, I think there could be either a major move, or if they shell out money for a Shields or someone like that, I think that they want somebody that when Jose gets back, you go, wow, they got two number ones. You know that type of guy. I think that's what they're. That's their dream. Apparently, they didn't say who the name was, but just, you know, talking to the front office people after the trade deadline, there was something close to that that was really in the works, but never, never got to the point where the trigger got pulled.
So do you anticipate that this could be a winter where the Marlins spend some significant money?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to, whether they do on you know, getting Yelich and Ozuna and Echeverria and, you know, Alvarez is hitting free, arbitration. You know, they're gonna spend some money just on their own inventory. Now, whether Stanton signs, that's gonna say a lot. If he doesn't, they would carry him arbitration and maybe use some of that money they were earmarking for him on more of a high-end free agent or international signing or yeah, something like that, or trade to acquire somebody to make a little money. So I think there's a realization that payroll obviously has to go up. So I think it's going to be a very interesting and very busy offseason for the Marlins.
So not to put too fine a point on it, but is 2015 kind of the year that they were sort of rebuilding towards when they took it down a couple years ago?
Well, I don't know if they thought it'd be 15 or 16, but you know, I think we talked about it. You noted a while back, you thought they might be a year ahead of schedule, but let's make it clear, 15, they're going for it. You know, I think that's pretty safe to say. They feel that with Stanton reaching his prime, and they hope to have more than a year or two, but, you know, with him there, with Jose Fernandez being as good as anybody, with, you know, Ozuna and Yelich, they feel like they got an outfield as good as anybody, and you know, they feel they have the makings of a really solid rotation. Their bullpen, ERA-wise, has been very good in the second half. I think they think the pieces are there. They're not a perfect team, but as you see, there's really not that team out there. That 15 is going to be a year they're going to really kind of go for it.
Are there any takeaways? I know you're not suggesting, and I don't think anybody expects them to have the kind of blowout winter they had 3 years ago, but are there any takeaways or lessons from 2012, the last time they really took a step forward and really thought, hey, this is a year that we're going to be a major factor? Is there anything they take from that season that informs building this next Marlins team that really expects to contend?
Yeah, there is. They, you know, the PR hit they took, Matthew, was substantial, and, you know, they still haven't restored it all. And until they not only sign people but retain people, and that's why Stanton is such a symbol. If Stanton signs long term, that's a sign of the one guy, probably the most skeptical and the most outspoken on the roster, that he buys in, that they would hope that resonates outward. But, you know, just talking to people in the front office, they don't want to ever endure what happened in 13. You know, the players that were through there to lose 100 games and, you know, were they 14 and 41 after 3 months or something, you know, they never want to feel that again. So, you know, their goal is like pretty much everybody. You know, they want to get to the postseason. They want to make the building that they will be year four work for them, not against them. There's obviously work to be done, but, you know, there's more positive energy, Matthew, I've seen on the team in the last 5-6 years. A togetherness, you know, you're going to have an off season where there's no either change of manager or general manager or president of baseball ops. You know, we haven't seen many years like that here. It's usually this time of year I'm scrambling to see who's the next manager going to be or the next, you know, what's going to happen with the GM. You know, so it's, you know, you finally seem to have that stability, and I think they finally feel they have the pieces that are fitting together. Now they want to see it, you know, grow out externally.
One spot we've talked a good bit about this year is second base. What do you expect second base to look like next season?
I think we're going to probably see a trade or two that's going to bring somebody in, but if not, Donovan Solano, Enrique Hernandez, I think you might have to see another one of those type of, you know, match up, you know, go with a grinder type of guy. But ideally, I think they want to get Echevarria, a double play partner that he knows is out there every time he's out there. So whether that guy exists or not, I think that's going to be high on their shopping list. So, yeah, I would think trade would probably be the way to go on that. And I think they're probably going to move some players that we're thinking they may not. I mean, Eovaldi's hitting arbitration. Cishek's going into year two. You know, these are guys that might bring back the kind of return they're hoping for. But, you know, they're also, you know, dealing within a budget like most teams are. And, you know, they're going to have to be careful to not scale they don't really want to do the Cishek for prospect type trade. They're going to have to get something that's tangible on the big league roster.
All right. Well, Joe Fusaro, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Philadelphia Phillies with MLB.com's Phillies beat reporter, Todd Zielecki. Todd, we've talked a lot about 2015 already this year with these Phillies, which is weird because they've played pretty decent ball for the last 3 or 4 months. But to boil it down overall, one last look at the 2014 season, what happened that this team was not as good as the front office thought it was going to be?
I think it comes down to the fact that they believed, for one reason or another, I think one, because of the money they invested, and two, just because of their past performance, they believed that if everybody was healthy and stayed on the field, that these guys would produce like they had in the past, and they would put up some wins. And quite frankly, it's just not there anymore. You know, Chase Utley, you know, he was a perennial MVP candidate from like 2006 through 2010. Ryan Howard was a former MVP. Jimmy Rollins was a former MVP. And I, you know, Carlos Ruiz was a couple of years ago was a very productive offensive catcher. And I think they thought if all those guys were healthy and Marlon Byrd came in and did what he did last year and Cody Ashe developed and Dominic Brown continued to do what he did last year, that they would be a productive offensive team. But obviously the numbers weren't there. And I think also the starting pitching did not perform up to expectations. Cole Hamels pitched great, but A.J. Burnett put up bad numbers. Kyle Kendrick put up bad numbers. Cliff Lee was hurt. And so really the only bright spot, the only thing that really kind of worked out for them was the bullpen. And so they have a lot of things that they need to work on in the offseason with, I think, finding a big bat, number one on the list, and then kind of rounding out that rotation, number two on the list.
And that does lead right in. How can this team get better? And there are some things that have to happen in the long run as far as development and as far as turning over the roster. But as far as 2015, how can this team get better in the next 6 months?
I think one thing that they are going to do is they are going to pursue Yosmani Tomas, the Cuban outfielder. They had a massive workout on Sunday, and the Phillies held a private workout with him the next day. I believe that they do like him. They liked him when Rusty Castillo, before he signed with the Red Sox, the Phillies worked him out privately, and sources had told me that they liked him, but they liked, quote, another guy more. And I think that was Tomas, or I know that was Tomas. And so I think they're going to take a run at him. And it's going to be expensive, but the Phillies do have money to go after a guy like that, and I think they have incentive to go after a guy like that because – like we just mentioned, you know, like we mentioned, they don't have any outfield prospects coming up through the system, knocking on the door. And the outfield free agent crop entering the offseason is relatively weak. So I think the Phillies are going to try to get him. Whether or not they get him remains to be seen, obviously. But I think if they can get that guy, you know, they have a projected middle of the order bat for the next several seasons, and I think they're hoping that that works out. And failing that, there's absolutely no quick fix. You know, you look at the free agent outfielders. There's Melky Cabrera. There's Nelson Cruz, whom I don't think they'll pursue. There's Colby Rasmus. Josh Willingham, Michael Kadire, those types of guys. So there's no immediate guy you look at and go, okay, if the Phillies can get this guy and if you get that guy, they're going to be right back in it. And I think they're going to try for Tomas, and failing that, it's going to be more of a longer look at things to get this team better.
And Colby Rasmus is one of my favorite guys, but the idea of Colby Rasmus dealing with you and your colleagues on a daily basis, I think I got to think that one doesn't end well. The flip side of that is as you kind of touched on, there are some questions in the rotation as well. Hamels is as good as anybody, but I think it's fair to wonder what Lee is right now, and it's fair to wonder what's beyond that. What does the rotation look like next year?
Yeah, that is really tricky now. Talking to Ruben Amaro Jr., first of all, Hamels is the ace, unless they trade him in the offseason. I think they will listen for offers for Cole Hamels, because I think with Pat Gillick now interim president, he has loyalty, but I think he also understands that you have to take risks to improve a ball club. And I think if the right deal comes along, I don't think Pat and Ruben will blink at trading Cole Hamels, but it's going to have to be a massive package. And they got some nibbles, before the trade deadline. They got some nibbles from the Cubs, who claimed him out on waivers in August. But I think they're going to open it up in the offseason and at least listen. Now, if Cole is back, you have your ace. They think that Cliff Lee will be ready to go by spring training. He had an elbow injury. I think he probably rushed back from the elbow injury. But they do believe that he'll be ready to go. He's going to begin his throwing program in November. So if Cliff Lee's healthy, all right, there's your second guy. David Buchanan, rookie, he's pitched actually pretty well overall. I think, the next step for him is to pitch a little bit deeper in games, but he's kept pretty much every game competitive so far. I think he's your third guy. Now, AJ Burnett is a big question mark. Now, the guy's made over, I think, I looked this up the other day, he's made over like $150 million in his career. He's 37. He's talked about retirement last year. He hinted at retirement this year. But he's got a $12.75 million player option. And I don't know too many people that would turn down a $12.75 million payday for one more year of work. AJ Burnett might be one of those guys, considering how much money he's made in his career. But even guys that have made $150 million, I think, are going, wow, can I really turn down another $12.75 million? So that's going to be interesting. He has a few days after the last game of the World Series to make that decision. If he's back, there's your fourth guy. Now the fifth guy remains to be seen. Kyle Kendrick made his last start for the Phillies in Miami. I tend to think that he will not be back. Jerome Williams is making his last start for the Phillies in Miami. Against the Braves, the final weekend of the series of the season. I think that he could be back, because other than that, they don't have anybody in the system really knocking down the door. And, they could also, look outside, obviously, and I think they might have to look outside, especially if Burnett leaves. But Burnett's a big, big question mark right now. If he comes back, you got him in there, and if not, now you have a couple more holes to fill.
Do you think it's reasonable to figure that a healthy Burnett is a better pitcher than he was this year if he gets his health issues sorted out, that – if he is back, he's probably better than he was this year?
And that's interesting, too, because he has alluded to the fact that he's felt miserable all season long. And but then you talk to Ryan Sandberg and you say, has he had other health issues? What exactly is going on there? And he says, according to Ryan Sandberg, he's like, he's given us length in games. His velocity is there. His stuff seems to be there. He's probably gonna get the surgery done on the hernia, inguinal hernia, and maybe that was a bigger issue than everybody has let on. But Burnett was kind of cagey about it, as he's talked about his health. So we don't know if there's anything more going on there in San Diego. Recently, we asked him if he might come back next year, and he said if I can lift my arm above my head, I might. So, but then we ask and say, is there an arm injury with this guy? And people say, as far as we know, there's no arm injuries. We're not really sure what he's talking about there. But a healthier A.J. Burnett, you would have to think, would be more effective than he was this year. But the mystery is, how much was he bothered by the hernia, and how much was he bothered by something else? Like I said, he's hinted at it, but he says he doesn't want to discuss it until his final start of the season, which is Saturday against the Braves.
So let's say, for the sake of argument, they don't get Tomas. And presumably, if they're willing to spend big on him, there is money to spend. And let's take a look at the rest of the market and acknowledge that there really is not much there. There's decent talent at third base, but that's one area where the Phillies presumably won't be spending. Is there any reason to think that if they don't spend on Tomas, they maybe go into that deeper end of the starting pitching market and look at Shields, Scherzer, one of those kind of guys? Or is that, have they been burned enough by some scary pitching contracts that they might not do that?
Yeah, I tend to think that they would not go after the early 30-year-old pitcher, and sign him to a 7-year type of deal. I think the reason why they are interested in a guy like Tomas is because he's 24 years old. So if they would sign him to a 7-year deal, they would pretty much have him through his prime years, even with a few more prime years once he hits free agency at that point. And I think, Pat Gillick has acknowledged that the Phillies, it's going to take a while to get this team back on track. So I'm not sure if they would go after one of those guys. Now, you talk to Ruben Amaro and you talk to Ryan Sandberg, and they're two guys that flat out say, I believe that you have to have great starting pitching to win. But if you don't have the offense there and there's no quick fix on offense, does it make sense to commit so much more money to another massive long-term contract when – those first 2-3 years of that deal, presumably the best years of that contract for that pitcher, might be wasted on a losing team. So Gillick has alluded to getting creative. I think, what they might do is try to trade some guys, which could figure into the Cole Hamilton thing, Marlon Byrd. I think they'll try to trade Jonathan Papelbon, but he keeps putting his foot in his mouth, and I think that might scare away some teams. So, when I look at this offseason, I really think it's going to be one of the more fascinating offseasons in recent memory, because the team is now coming off two consecutive losing seasons, three consecutive seasons without a postseason berth, and with so many holes to fill and not a lot of easy ways to do it. And so I'm really going to be interested to see how they go about it and kind of who stays, who goes. I think, and I really do think that everything and anything is on the table.
All right, well, Todd Zielecki, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.